I'd like to call the Health, Education, Social Service Committee together at 1:33. We have all members present. Senators Elton, Thomas, Dyson, Caldry, and Betty Davis here. We do have a preview overview today, and we're going to do that before we take up the bill. And we do, I want to thank you for coming for this overview that we're having. The presenters today are already in place, and we have Patrick Reinhardt. He's the Executive Director of Alaska State Independent Living Council. And we also have Joanna Giesler, and she's the Executive Director for Kenai Peninsula Independent Living Center. I don't know which order you're going to go in, but you have the floor at this time.
Thank you, Senator Davis, members of the committee. It's our honor here to be here today to talk to you about an exciting program of the Alaska Centers for Independent Living, and that's this Aging and Disability Resource Center. It's a new program, relatively new in the United States, but one that a couple years ago we got a grant from the federal government through the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation from the Administration on Aging and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And the primary emphasis of this grant around the country was to kind of locate all long-term care services information into one place in each community across the country. Our centers, through the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation as our primary partner, were able to get that grant, and that's something we've been doing the last few years, and we're here to tell you about some of the progress of that grant. As I said, the grantee, or the main source of the grant funding for us, is the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. We're the managing partner, the Statewide Independent Living Council. And the council, many of our members are right here in the audience. So we had a board meeting down here, and we look for the opportunity to come and talk to you about this. The council members are from around the state. They represent people with disabilities from many different communities. They're all appointed by the governor, and we're all here today to tell you about this program. The service delivery aspect of this program is from our Centers for Independent Living. And we have five of them across the state, and Joanna Geisler is going to tell you a little bit about each one of them.
Good afternoon. We have currently...
State your name for the record.
Okay, my name is Joanna Geisler. I'm director of the Kenai Peninsula Independent Living Center, and I live in Homer. We have four independent living centers within the state of Alaska. Each of us has a region of responsibility in which we try to deliver as many of the independent living services as we can, as our resources allow us to do. The Southeast Alaska Independent Living is here in Southeast Alaska, and they're represented in the purple area there on the slide. Access Alaska Fairbanks is the main office, is located in Fairbanks, obviously, and they are part of Access Alaska Anchorage. Fairbanks is responsible for the orangish type color, a huge region of the state. Access Anchorage is responsible for the red. And Arctic Access is a small 1 to 2 person center up in Kotzebue, and they are responsible, they're green and responsible for services in Northwest Alaska. And finally, our center is responsible for the Gulf Coast region and have offices on the Kenai Peninsula and do outreach to the other areas. So as you can see, all of the centers have huge regions of responsibility, of course, on our are the resources that we do get, the funds that we do get. Our capacity is not such that we can provide services to everyone. Having said that, with this Aging and Disability Resource Center grant, we were, I think, perfectly placed because we do have partners within each of the communities, and one of the major components of the Aging and Disability Resource Centers is to gather information and then be able to disseminate the information. So we were the only entities within the state of Alaska who really cover that entire area. Okay.
The original goals of the grant, the program was kind of to create a single entry point for consumers to obtain information on all long-term care services, both public and private. The second goal is access to all long-term care supports through intake, assessment, eligibility screening, and programmatic and financial eligibility determinations that are integrated so closely coordinated that the process is seamless to the consumer, and that formal linkages between and among the major pathways to long-term care, including nursing home pre-admission screening, hospital discharge planning, and the various community agencies and organizations that serve resource center target populations. Now, these are incredibly huge goals, and it's just having started this project about 2.5 years ago, we're not there yet. We're a long ways from having that seamless process of access to long-term care services, but it is an ultimate goal of the project is to kind of meld all these different resources that are available to people, both public and private, and so that people can make one phone call in their various region and get the information they need, whether it's a short-term, small service such as a home modification to a bathroom or something more significant such as a Medicaid waiver. The point is that people get one name, one organization, one number to call, and they'll be able to get the information that they need and access that. And it could be that they're eligible for public services, of which case then the centers will explore what their options are, or it may be private pay as well. So those were the original goals, and they still are the ultimate goals of the project as we move along. So far, year one, we completed the pilot sites. We started this with Southeast Alaska Independent Living Center and with Kenai Peninsula Independent Living Center. So the first year, we funded those programs, and the next year, we followed up with the other three centers, the Fairbanks Office of Access Alaska, the Anchorage Office, and the Arctic Access in Kotzebue. One of the big things that the first things we did was obviously get information out to the public about these resource centers. We developed posters and brochures and put them around the state at not only other providers' offices and public and state offices, but also private providers and doctors' offices and any place where you might think that people might want information about long-term care supports and services. There was a concerted effort to get thousands and thousands of brochures and posters out there. And immediately, there was an increase in the number of calls that the organizations were receiving across the state. Some of the organizations, I can say, you know, especially in the smaller communities, they're well known in terms of the place to call and the organization to go to when you have a question about long-term care supports. And in the larger urban areas, that may not be the case. And so getting information out there was important. Was there anything
here, Joanna? Yeah, I think one of the most important partners that we have in all of the communities are the senior centers. I think especially in the smaller communities, senior centers are often a place where everyone gathers. There are often community events where people gather, and obviously seniors take advantage of the programs. And I wanted to just give a little vignette about an older gentleman, 82-year-old gentleman who lives in Nikiski and lives in a small cabin, and he describes himself as a kind of a private person. He's got various disabilities or various health conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure. And suddenly some of his neighbors and community members noticed that he was becoming weak. He wasn't coming around as much. And he was able to find a place in one of the local assisted living homes where throughout the winter now he's kind of gotten his strength up. He's feeling better about himself. He's able to take care of himself a little bit more medically. And just actually a few days ago, we got one of our offices got a call from the Nikiski Senior Center and said, this gentleman is wanting to move back to his cabin. What can you do? And so very easily we could say, we can go out, we can look at his house, we can see his cabin, we can see if it needs to be made accessible, if the bathroom needs modification, if he may need some personal care services, because he does have a lot of medical needs. And I think together that partnership with all of the different community entities, especially the senior centers, will allow this gentleman to maintain his dignity and his privacy and get to go back to his cabin where he's lived for the last 40 or 50 years. So I think those are the kind of relationships that this particular program has allowed us to build, and hopefully we'll be able to maintain those relationships.
Just some of the continued accomplishments. We got enthusiastic site leads located in each one of the centers. That's part of what the funding paid for, in getting them trained and knowledgeable about all the activities, long-term care activities and programs in their communities. One of the first things that ended up happening and wasn't anticipated is that each one of the centers were, and these site leads in particular, were involved in the, just because of the timing, the Medicare Part D enrollment activities, which is, as we all know, was a significant undertaking to get thousands and thousands of people enrolled in that program. And many of our centers were kind of the focal point for getting that done for a lot of consumers. I know on the Kenai Peninsula, where Joanna's program there, it was a significant number of people enrolled and who saved a significant amount of money from that activity.
And I think the last count we had on the Kenai Peninsula, and again, all of the other Centers for Independent Living had similar numbers, but I think we had about 350 individuals who came in, both individuals with disabilities under the age of 65 and individuals who are over the age of 65 who receive Medicare, came in, and our lead person, J.R. Trombley, was able to initially enroll folks into a Medicare Part D plan, and then when the time came around a year later to assess whether or not that was an appropriate plan for those individuals. And he keeps statistics on those kind of things. There were several individuals who saved over $1,500 a year in the different plans just by assessing the different plans. And it really, I don't know how much all of you have taken a look at the website or know much about Medicare Part D. It isn't really rocket science, but it is very computer-based. It's very, it could be very confusing just in terms of the language that's used. So I think the rollout of the Medicare Part D plan, I think it has helped a lot of seniors and individuals with disabilities get their medication needs met, and I truly believe that without the ADRCs in place, it would have been a much more difficult path to go down for most of our folks.
One of the more recent activities that we, accomplishments that we just got signed yesterday, was a memorandum of understanding between the Division of Senior and Disability Services, ourselves, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, Alaska Public Assistance, and all of our Centers for Independent Living in terms of the future of the ADRC. And this was, you can imagine, a lot of different players involved in the issues of long-term care support, so there was a lot of energy and effort that went into this. We just finished it, and yesterday at our meeting, all the players signed it, so we were happy to announce that being done. And it's very important in terms of this future of streamlining access to long-term care supports and services. We can't get there without all the players at the table, and now we believe we have everybody there in an effort to make this the kind of the wave of the future in terms of people gaining access to public and private long-term care support. So we're pleased to announce that. And then the other thing that we want to tell you a little bit about right now is this thing called Network of Care. And Network of Care is a web-based program that we are going to be purchasing through some grant funds for the state of Alaska, in which all providers for aging and disability populations will be put up onto this website. And so people will be able, the consumers and other providers and people looking out after different consumers can have access to this website, get very good information, up-to-date information about each provider, where they're located, who they provide services to. And then there's a number of other features to this website, including the ability to create your own medical or programmatic profile that you can share with other people that when you want to do that. So if you're developing a medical profile for an aging parent and you have their permission to work on that and they need to get the information to an assisted living home that they're looking at, there's an ability to do this transfer of information, of course, all with permission, of course, of the consumer. And this is something that we're excited about starting, and we're going to get going and just got the funding in place this week to start this process. It will take about 3 months. By about July 1st, you might expect to see our first wave of this up on the web. So we're excited to get it done. Many states have done this, and we're just kind of jumping into this. And, of course, it'll tie into the state systems as well. So eventually something like this will have forms, streamlined forms that you could use for Medicaid or other public supports that can then be transferred, and you don't have to fill out a different form for every different program that you might be eligible for. Your basic information could be utilized and transferred from one provider to the next, and that'll take a while to develop that aspect of it, but the basic information about all services and supports will be up as soon as we get it up on the web. Just a little bit of statistical data from 1 year of fiscal year. This last fiscal year, FY06, there were 3,231 consumers that were served through Alaska ADRCs. This is an increase of 12% from the previous year. There were 958 consumers, or 30% were 60 years or older. I think your packet had 38. That was a miscalculation there. But 30% were 60 years or older. That's up from 20% a year ago. And that's probably a direct result of this program and grant and the information that we put out there and the relationships built up with senior centers and other organizations. They responded to 6,312 information and referral calls statewide, which was a significant increase as well, an increase of 27% from the previous year. Again, probably as a result of the getting the information out about this program.
I think one of the things that maybe I've taken for granted that you all know is why the Centers for Independent Living are really the key people or the key entities to be providing these services. If you all don't know, Centers for Independent Living provides services to people and families who experience disabilities, any disability, and anyone of any age that experiences a disability. So rather, the senior centers have an age criteria. Infant Learning has an age criteria. We are the only entity that really looks at the individual regardless of disability, regardless of age. And so I think that has, again, that is one of the reasons that we're a good placement for these services. I would like to say, I don't know if Patrick was going to say this or not, but we were the only state in the union where Centers for Independent Living took the lead to be the ADRCs. And from what I hear, from what we hear nationally, a lot of the states are going to try to move in that direction. Because again, the centers have such less strict eligibility criteria.
No, I wasn't going to say that.
Okay, stole your thunder.
Just a little bit more statistical information. The centers were involved in helping relocate 20 different consumers from nursing homes or other institutional settings this last year into more community-based living. Mm-hmm. We know that, and I'm sure you are aware of the terms of the savings that results in for the state of Alaska in terms of the Medicaid costs of institutional services versus home and community-based services. And more of a subjective number, but one that we kept track of, 143 consumers diverted from having to go into an institutional setting or nursing home type setting. And again, another significant savings, we think, to the state in terms of knowing that Medicaid pays for over 80% of all nursing home care in the state. We do believe that this has a significant impact on the bottom line in terms of the amount of money spent by the public for long-term care.
Another little vignette from Fairbanks. Most of the Centers for Independent Living have loan closets where we have equipment, could be wheelchairs, it could be walkers, canes, hospital beds. And Access Alaska and Fairbanks got a call requesting a hospital bed from an individual, a 77-year-old individual. And so the ADRC person looked into that. As it turns out, the hospital bed was actually for the 93, 94-year-old mother of the 77-year-old who they happened to live together. So I think what we find with this, the dovetail of these services is people come in, elders perhaps come in for services of one kind, develop a relationship, and then we are able to follow them back into their homes and develop a relationship such that if they do not want to enter a nursing home or assisted living home, we're able to provide some supports and some information to help them be where they want to be.
So some of the ongoing events, I mentioned network of care. That's going to be a primary work of ours in terms of getting the information uploaded and getting correct information next few months. The centers continue to collaborate with seniors and other service providers in their respective communities and developing some formal relationships, some informal. There's ongoing collaboration between Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. As we all know, housing is always a big issue in terms of people wanting to stay at home and in their community, so that's a very important connection. And then with the Division of Senior and Disability Services, the Commission on Aging, and of course the some of the federal entities that are involved. And another thing that we're looking at right now is a way to utilize some of the state general funds that we used to support our Centers for Independent Living that occurred before even this grant, even before we applied for this grant. There's funding that does support the Centers for Independent Living that comes through the Department of Labor. And it's in labor because we're attached to the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation by federal law and state statute. And so our general fund dollars that support the independent living centers comes through there. But we're looking at ways to use those general fund dollars, have an agreement with our Medicaid office in which we could draw down the Medicaid match, just the federal dollars, because we're already spending the general fund dollars at the centers. And so that's a way that the feds have just opened up for us to utilize. It's a Medicaid admin match. We've had conversations with the folks in the Medicaid Finance Division about how to do this and what it takes to do this. And it looks quite feasible, and we're going to explore that option over the next several months and see how we might draw down some extra federal funds that we could have but have never done so before. Some of the challenges that we expect, funding to keep the ADRCs functioning beyond June 2007. I just mentioned one of the things we're looking at, this Medicaid admin match. We're also looking at the possibility of a federal supplemental grant. We've heard that there's going to be one to continue this for another couple years, but it hasn't been announced yet, but it's a rumor at this point. And then, of course, state general funds to help support the programs and the ADRCs is a major issue. We're trying to, kind of a big emphasis that we need to look at over the next couple years is what can these ADRCs do to streamline the actual access to Medicaid and other public supports, whether or not they're not doing the eligibility stuff or they're doing pre-screening activities. Initially, the idea was that at least each of the ADRCs are going to be working with individuals and getting them prepared and counseled to the point of where they, if they are going to be eligible for any public benefits, at least they're getting the correct information and the information that they need to go and apply for those services. On a national level, what they're looking at really is kind of that, just that seamless approach to those, that when you approach one agency, you get most of that information taken care of. What happens in terms of eligibility and access to those services happens behind the scenes. The individual doesn't need to be involved on, you know, the nitty-gritty of who's doing what and who's paying for what and when and where, that's being taken care of by the ADRCs themselves in terms of just getting the correct information both from the individual to the state and vice versa. So that's an important aspect that we have to look into. Partnership development, that makes sense. One of the issues we're going to have to address is, you know, we have these five ADRCs now. Will there be more? What will they look like? What are some minimum standards of criteria that we expect if anybody, if they put that moniker Aging and Disability Resource Center, you know, what we might expect if that happens with other partners? Those are some of the issues. And then finally, you know, we are looking at transferring the management of this program to the Division of Senior and Disability Services eventually, and without losing momentum. And that's important to know, because in many states, that's where this program and project started, and it didn't start in our state. We took the initiative, we jumped on this grant opportunity and got the ball rolling. But at some point, where the central information about long-term care support services in the states, the management of this type of program needs to be with them. So we are, part of our discussion and our memorandum of understanding with the state has been how that happens, when that happens, and that's going to be an element of challenge over the next year to 2 years that we do that. And that's pretty much it. We'll put up our, here's the information for contact of the State Independent Living Council. Each of the ADRCs, the contacts, the local contacts are listed there. And we wanted to give these to you in particular because we know constituents sometimes contact you and they have questions about long-term care issues, and we feel confident enough that you could give them these numbers and talk to these people and they'll get good information for whatever part of the state you live in. And very we'd good. Love any questions or discussion you'd like to have. Thank you.
There's a couple of questions that I have, but I'll first ask the other committee members if they have questions or comments you want to make. Anybody? Go back to the memorandum of agreement. You say you're working on that, but I, on the other hand, I heard you say something about June 07 being the end of your grant, the monies or whatever. How will you function from that point?
Well, that's a good question.
You say you're asking for money, but you're not asking for money in this budget.
We are asking for money to support the Centers for Independent Living through the Department of Labor and increment request. And that was separate and above and beyond this. This grant itself requires approximately $300,000 per year. And we have some carryover funding from this fiscal year that we're going to carry over to next year. And these are the issues that we're working with DSDS in terms of this Medicaid admin match. We expect and hope that that's going to generate some income. But we are kind of scrambling as of July 1st, what do we do to keep these contracts going with these five independent living centers as ADRCs as July 1st? So it is an issue and a question that we're constantly having these conversations with the state Medicaid folks and others about. And we did not put in an increment request or anything related to this particular program to anybody with the legislature this year at all. So we're kind of in a place where we're going to, I think, be scrambling, but we're looking at lots of different options.
And once the transfer is made over to the senior division, then what goes away for you? What happens with?
I can tell you what I hope doesn't go away. I hope what doesn't go away is the Centers for Independent Living involvement. And I think, if I can speak real candidly, we Centers for Independent Living and the State Independent Living Council took a leap and went after this grant, was successful in getting this federal monies, when some of the other entities didn't feel that it was worthwhile or we didn't need the funds or whatever. We were successful in getting the funds and developing, I think, a real good program. Yes. And now that we suddenly see ADRC, Aging and Disability Resource Centers, being addressed as one of the key points at which states will receive funding, suddenly there's a lot of interest in who wants to be called an ADRC. So my personal fear and fear as one of the recipients of this $45,000 grant each year is that if we don't get continued funding for this project, then we will have to lay our person off.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the information that we have gathered will be retained within our agency and with our existing staff, but his particular expertise will no longer be there. And I'm going to be candid again, we struggled with the idea of should we ask for money in this climate through DSDS, through HESS, should we ask for funds? Or should we hope that DSDS recognizes what we have done and what we are and who we are, and that they give us funding that they may already have?
As they're giving you grants, some grants, no.
Right.
And that was a part of discussion under the memorandum of agreement. Is that in the works?
Yes, and it's the continued part of the discussion on a weekly basis. So this is where the Medicaid admin match issue came up. But there's no commitments. We had hoped by the time we had a memorandum of understanding, we had a clear understanding of the future funding of the program, but we can't say that with all honesty, that we have that perfectly clear.
Thank you. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Senator Davis. I'm looking at your page 5. It's the statistical data. The increase 12% over the previous year. Do you have some kind of anticipated numbers, just from the from censuses or whatever, of what you're looking forward to and how that impacts funding and what will be required as we're all aging and many of us will need that type of service?
Yes, Senator Thomas, to the chair, we haven't done that kind of statistical analysis and economic analysis. In fact, that was a subject of conversation for our board meeting in the last couple of days of what do we really need to do to kind of get the economic picture of the impact of not only just geographic issues but the aging issues on the services provided by these centers. And we haven't done that, and we need to do that, and we recognize that that's an important element of kind of showing what we need to do to be prepared for that growth in the future. What we do know is that, the funding for, even before this grant, for the Centers for Independent Living and the services that they have provided have all been fairly stagnant over the years, but yet there's been the constant growth in the numbers of people approaching them. And with this grant and giving an additional $45,000 to each one of these centers, we not only, $45,000 hardly covered the significant impact of growth that we brought upon them with this program. And it's something we need to get a handle on in terms of the economic future, because we all know the aging population and the impact on many services and providers. What we think we'll be able to show, if we do any kind of economic analysis, is that providing services up front to people one time, sometimes they may need just a home mod in their home, mm-hmm. this year, maybe that staves off them needing a Medicaid waiver and a full all-out, long-term care plan for a couple more years. And that type of impact, nobody's really done to look at What are all these smaller services that are provided through organizations like this? What does it do to keep people independent in the community longer, and therefore not only with their dignity, but with less expense to the public support system that exists out there? And we've got a long way to figure that one out, I think.
Thank you.
Okay. And you said that you had some of your board members present, right?
Yes. Dave,
were you in town for a board meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anybody on the board that wished to make a comment or have anything to say? Not trying to put anybody on the spot. Just want to make sure that I give you that opportunity.
I'm Tisha Simmons. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. I work for the University of Alaska Fairbanks as a faculty member. I was in the car accident in 1992. And we had to move to Seattle for 6 months for rehab. And actually, Fairbanks didn't even want to take me back to the hospital because I was ventilator dependent, and thanks to Senator Stevens, kind of forced them to. But it was very, very hard. My mom, at the age of 55 years old, had to take care of me for 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. And for a while, we had to live off of food boxes. It was very difficult. She was a single mother and supported us financially all of my life, my sister's life, and from going to being a director of a mental health agency in a rural community to being unemployed and caring for somebody who's in a wheelchair 24 hours a day was a huge adjustment for all of us. And I remember when we first called Access Alaska, and we didn't really know what was going on. We were actually being kicked out of, because they were changing the only wheelchair accessible apartment in Fairbanks into a hotel. So basically our move out date was May 1st, and here it is the end of July, and we're still living there. And I remember when we called Access Alaska, and we really didn't know where else to turn, and they just said, well, tell us what you need, and the only place we could move into is the Wedgwood apartment, but there was no ramp, so I could get in, but I couldn't really get out unless, you know, we had help come over. And Access Alaska helped us figure out all the resources to get a ramp built, and, you know, the simplest thing of having to be able to wash my hair. And so I'm just really thankful, and I think it'd be really unfortunate, especially with the aging population. My grandmother is now 90 years old, and, you know, she's used to living on the Yukon River and going to all the spring carnivals and weddings, funerals, everything. She's very, we call her, she's still nomadic because she's got to go to everything everywhere along the Yukon River. And, but she's in an assisted living home now. And, you know, my sister and I, we're the ones in the family that are largely responsible for her care. And, you know, half the time we don't know what to do because we know all about adults with physical disabilities, but we don't really know about the aging. And so I'm always calling, you know, different places, and I've called Access Alaska several times, and I just think it'd be really unfortunate for any employers to lose any services they provide, because people with disabilities can really do a lot of things. I'm a mother now of a 2.5-year-old. I work full time, I pay my taxes, but there's so many people out there that don't know and aren't able to do things. You know, I had my mother got very involved and went into the ring of disability politics with her boxing gloves on, and thankfully for her, you know, I can't really claim any of my successes for myself, because if it wasn't for my mom pushing the way clear for me, you know, I just kind of went along and went to school and applied for jobs when I got done with schooling. And but really, you know, getting the waiver and getting an apartment and getting personal care done, it was really all the work of her. And there's a lot of people out there that don't have somebody like my mother to clear the way for them, and especially our elderly. It's really hard to see so many of the elderly go from being considered wise and the wisdom keepers to, okay, now you're in the way and there's nobody to take care of you, so you have to go here, you have to go there. I think we have a great opportunity right now. Sometimes I think I'm thankful because I'm young enough that when the baby boomers are all aged and older and they've gone through all the crises that are going to have to go through, maybe we'll have learned what we actually need to do by the time I'm old and I have to go through those things. So that's all I want to say is that I hope that in whatever thoughts you have about ADRC or the SILS or independent living, that you'll keep in mind that people with disabilities and the aging. I have, in the department I teach for, I have elder co-instructors in all of my classes. They teach with me in the classroom, and they're absolutely amazing people. They have so much to share and so much more. I could, you know, I teach courses on like addictions and substance abuse prevention and mental health and recovery, and they are really the ones, I can facilitate it all, but they're the ones that really teach the students so much. So I hope you'll support us with the independent living things that we're working for. Cheers.
Thank you so much for sharing, and let's go back to make sure that we did have your name on the record.
Tisha, T-E-I-S-H-A, Simmons, S-I-M-M-O-N-S.
All right. Thank you so much.
Is there anybody else?
The information that you have shared is very, very valuable to us, and we're thankful for the information. I think you said you had some information you wanted to make sure that we got out to other members of the legislature, and we'll be glad to do that so they may know about your program.
Yeah, we give information with the contact numbers and everything. We thought that, you know, because of the calls that you get from constituents, that it might be helpful for you. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nate? We do have one quick bill that's going to come before us, members. So we'll go right away into that as soon as we can. Get started. It won't take very long for us to complete this.
Spring break week. I brought my kids.
Wonderful. Good they could come.
Get out of your way.
Boy. The bill that's coming before us is SB 85, and it's for the extension of the medical board. State Medical Board. You ready?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Richard Benavides, staff to Senator Davis, the sponsor of Senate Bill 85. Senate Bill 85 would extend the sunset date of the State Medical Board until June 30th, 2013. In accordance with the recommendations of the legislative auditor. The legislative auditor has concluded that the State Medical Board meets the statutory requirements of public need and should continue to regulate the occupations under its purview. The board consists of 5 licensed physicians, 1 licensed physician's assistant, and 2 persons with no direct financial interest in the healthcare industry. The board serves the public interest by establishing the minimum education and work experience requirements that individuals must meet to become licensed physicians, osteopaths, podiatrists, paramedics, and physician assistants. The board further serves the public interest by investigating complaints against licensed professionals and taking disciplinary licensing action when appropriate. The board has consistently proved to be efficient, and therefore we recommend that the state board be extended to June 30th, 2013. We have to speak on behalf of the audit, Pat Davidson from Legislative Audit and Budget, and also Rick Urin from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development.
Okay. Is there any comments that need to be made by the division? You're here for questions? Yes, Senator Dice.
I'm just going to inquire if you're ready for a motion.
Okay, we're ready for a motion. Thank you very much for the overview, and I think we are ready to move on. Actually, the audit was a good one, and we have people here for questions. I am ready for a motion if you are. I didn't want to rush it, but yes, we'll take one.
And if you'd prefer somebody from your caucus, that's fine. Hey.
It doesn't matter where you're from. You don't have to be from my caucus.
All right. Well, Madam Chair, I move that we move SB 85 from committee with individual recommendations, and I believe a zero fiscal note.
No.
It has a note, but it's
the same as it's always been.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, you've heard the recommendation. Are you in favor of the recommendation that we move this bill from our committee?
You ask for unanimous consent.
I'd ask unanimous consent, Madam Chair.
Okay, we've asked for unanimous consent. All in favor of the unanimous consent?
Okay.
Apparently. Motion carries, and we'll move this bill on.
Well done, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Nice. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.